Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Orlando Magic Daily Podcast. This is Orlando Magic Daily co-editor Philip Rossman-Reich. I am joined, as I usually am on this podcast, by our good pal and co-editor Brett Roberts. Brett, how are you doing this evening?
Pretty good. I'm glad spring's here. It was long waited, you know.
What is spring? There's a little
constant summer in Florida, but I'm not. Yeah. I'm not.
Well, I was gonna say Brett isn't located in Orlando like I am. We're actually going through a cold snap right now.
Oh,
it was in the
50s. So it's like 60.
It is 60 actually, but it was in the 50s yesterday. So that's cold for us.
On Saturday it was 78 degrees, and on Sunday it was snowing. So,
oh man,
it's a crazy place to be, the weather here anyway. But weather is not good, is it?
I mean, it's, well, we'll get into it. I brought a sweater out yesterday. I was very proud of myself. But yeah, the Magic are in an interesting spot, and we want to talk a little bit about what to expect the rest of the season. They're at game 70, so they've got 12 games remaining this year. So, you know, we wanted to get together for a podcast, kind of update where things are at, maybe look back at the season a little bit and talk about what they can still do with these last 12 games, or whether it's just time to kind of pack it in and do nothing with these last 12 games. They've slipped down now to 12th in the East. They fell behind the Milwaukee Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks caught them. They're now 29-41. That winning record dream that Scott Skiles had at the beginning of the year is more or less done with one more loss. If my math is correct, which it sometimes is not, they're six losses or six Chicago wins away from being eliminated from the playoffs. It might actually be five. They play Detroit tomorrow. Detroit needs to get to 42 as well. So it's actually five. They're five losses or five Detroit wins away from being eliminated from the playoffs officially. In 12 games, that seems pretty certain it's going to happen. And so, you know, we've got the big question of what's left to play for. But before we get into that, you know, I think the trade deadline is a pretty good dividing line, and it happened to be the All-Star break. The Magic made those moves to bring in Brandon Jennings and Arsenio Yusova and send out Tobias Harris. I don't know if we've talked on the podcast since then, but what were your general impressions of the move now that we've been with it for about a month? What do you see from those players, and is there any hope that they'll stay on this roster past the end of this year?
There's little hope that they'll stay on the roster, but not none. I already knew what to expect, really, from both of them, so there's no real surprises. Jennings certainly can put the ball in the basket sometimes, but his percentages are still low. Ilyasova is kind of a one-trick pony. I mean, they're good role players, but are they any better than any role players that we might choose to retool with otherwise? I can't say necessarily they are. It's a good little stint they put in, but I don't think that either of them are like must-haves, you know?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Brandon Jennings has actually played a little bit better than I expected him, but mostly since he took over the starting role from Elfrid Payton with Elfrid's sprained elbow issue knocking him out of the lineup. He's done a good job getting the Magic into their offense, and with him being a free agent, I'd be interested maybe to see him come back at a much reduced salary, but I'm not, you know, banging down the door to do it. He still does a lot of things that I expected that he would do that would frustrate me, mainly dribbling around aimlessly for about 8, 9, 10 seconds and then hoisting a mid-range jumper that's contested. Not a huge fan of that. I don't know who is. Ilyasova,
no.
Well, I think his defense has been okay. I think he hedges, which not a lot of Magic players do. He's just – I'm not – I have been of the opinion, and I've had people ask me this and tell me this, that the Magic didn't get enough for Tobias Harris, and I've pretty much told them, look, the Magic, you know, for everything they said about hoping, you know, and I think they truly hoped this, whether it was true or not, whether they knew, thought it would happen or not, I do think they hoped that bringing in two rotation caliber players to bring off the bench would bring some balance to the team. It didn't, and they're pretty much just cap fodder to help clear the cap. I've begun telling people Ersan Ilyasova is more or less a walking $8 million trade exception with his non-guaranteed salary next year.
Yeah.
So I'm not particularly high on either. I doubt either will stay on the team. I'll be surprised if they do. And essentially, that deal was done to clear cap room. We're recording this on Tuesday night before the Magic take on the Detroit Pistons. Before we kind of move on to some of the larger implications of all that, what were your thoughts on the Tobias Harris trade? Did the Magic make the right decision, dumping salary essentially, or should they have held on to him? And obviously, he's been playing really, really well with that Detroit team in a good situation, competing for a playoff spot. Playing in a way that he couldn't or didn't in Orlando this year. What were your thoughts on sending him out in this deal?
Well, you know, my simple reaction at the time was that it was a necessary risk. And to some degree, I still believe that's true. I think that the team was never going to make any drastic changes towards the better without getting in a couple max contracts. And the problem was that you pointed out, and a lot of people pointed out, and that Tank Commander was first to point out, probably, our buddy Tank Commander is Zach Palmer.
Zach Palmer, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, is that we're not guaranteed to get anything with that money. You know, it might just be a bunch of cap room that never gets spent on any great player. But you know, it's like to make the leap to being a really tough team. It wasn't going to happen with Tobias Harris and what's currently on the roster. Something needs to come in. And we know it's not going to happen through this draft either, probably. So at this point, it's all on free agency. And it's a total gamble. I admit that. I admit that it's a gamble.
Yeah, and I certainly thought it was a gamble, too. Not necessarily a gamble I thought the Magic were quite ready to take, and I think we'll get into that in just a moment here. Free agents are very, very fickle, especially the kind of free agents that I think the Magic want to get because they don't quite have the superstar on their roster. They either don't know it or they don't have it yet. It certainly right. hasn't revealed itself in many ways. And they get very, very fickle about where they decide to play and who they decide to play with. And essentially, I think the Magic are going to have to take a risk on a guy like they did. I mean, and this is maybe the wrong example because it worked out, but they're going to have to take a risk and find a guy like Tracy McGrady who's about to break out like they did in 2000. They're going to have to, you know, an example that didn't work out was like a Teron. I mean, Teron Lue was not at the same level, but the Magic signed Teron Lue saying, here's a backup point guard for the NBA champion Los Angeles Lakers who seems ready to take on a starting role. He wasn't. Magic paid the price for that and moved on within a year, but they paid the price for it.
McGrady loves some Tyronn Lue. He wanted to drag him with him to Houston.
Yeah, I think the Magic chained Teron Lue to Houston, chained Teron Lue to Tracy McGrady and sent him to Houston. But like, I mean, that's the risk you take in free agency is when you're asking guys to step up and roll, sometimes they don't have it. I generally think the problem with the Magic right now is they have guys who are in roles that they're not capable of playing full-time or necessarily playing for a successful team, and that's one of the issues that they needed to resolve and needed to figure out. And I think that is one of the reasons Tobias Harris is no longer on the Magic. They've kind of made the decision who they were going to move forward with, and Tobias Harris wasn't that guy. You could kind of tell by the way they used him, too, that he wasn't necessarily that guy. And so they moved on. They cleared some cap room and gave themselves some flexibility to go find that guy or to bring in the guy that makes it work. And so, to me, that leads up to the biggest question that we've had to ask and to answer this season. What do the Orlando Magic have? Like, what is on this roster?
And, a lot of inconsistency.
I mean, essentially, like, let's turn the clock back to October. The things that there are a few goals that the Magic talked about this year. Scott Skiles said, number one, You know, we want to make the playoffs. That should be every team's goals, goes without saying. Number two, in order to make the playoffs, I think we need to have a 500 record. Again, those are good goals. With where the Magic were, they put an emphasis on winning. They wanted those goals. Those are the goals that seem to be gone now. They're very difficult to achieve at this point. Essentially, it's going to take a pretty big collapse for the Magic for the Magic to get to that playoff spot, just because there's so many teams in front of them, and the odds are stacked against them. The next goal for the Magic then was to begin establishing a winning culture and to play meaningful games later in the season, in March, around maybe not necessarily this time of year, but certainly they dreamed of playing meaningful games here. And, you know, that's kind of the goal that I centered my expectations of the season on, because this is the first time the Magic are trying to win, essentially, since the Dwight Howard trade. And learning how to win is a very difficult process, especially when you don't have veterans on the roster. And I think that's been the biggest issue that this team has faced, and the biggest thing that they haven't been able to accomplish. But at the same time, I do think they're playing meaningful games right now. They're not out of the playoffs. They're not technically out of the playoffs yet. Scott Skiles can go to his team and say, "Hey guys, we've got to win tonight, or we're out of the playoff, or we're not making the playoffs." And like after the All-Star break, he said, final 30 games, he said, "We've got to go 18-12, I think, we got to win 20 of these last 30 to make the playoffs.
20 and 10, yeah. It was 20.
If we get 18, we might have a shot." You know, it was good to... It wasn't good that they needed to win two-thirds of their games to make the playoffs, essentially, but it was good that you could, as a coach, go to this locker room and say that. Now, should the players or the coaches be satisfied with achieving that nebulous playing meaningful games and into March goal? No, they needed to make the playoffs. They needed to set a higher expectation, and the frustration of this season is that the players didn't seem to rise up to that expectation, or the coach didn't pull the right levers to get them to that expectation, get them to that level. But when I look back at the season, when I look back from the goals that this team set in October, I don't see full progress or the full step forward that the Magic wanted to take, but I do see a step forward. And to me, that says a lot about where this team is at and what they're trying to do, and where they can go, and what they need to do to build to next year. I've been talking a lot here, so what's your reaction to all that? How do you break down this season so far in light of maybe preseason goals before we get into shifting expectations and all that?
I think I'll introduce the elephant in the room. Sure. I'm going to come in. That is that the Magic were 19-13 when the calendar year rolled over. Yeah. And we were shifting our expectations to something far bigger. Because, before the season, me and you both said 32-35 wins. We agreed. And they still are going to be right in that range.
They should hit. I mean, I had them at 35 wins. That's a 10-win improvement. They should hit that still.
They'll be close to that. So, yeah, I mean, like, in terms of wins, did we get what we wanted from the season? Probably. Yeah, but it's just the weird way in which it happened. The way that it toyed with our emotions when Scott Skiles won December Coach of the Year and things looked really promising and people were all talking about the Magic. And now people aren't looking for the Magic on League Pass anymore, you know?
They are when Aaron Gordon's playing. But
when Aaron Gordon's playing, like, things just change radically. I mean, he's been the biggest revelation of this meaningless stretch of the season, you know? He's been the meaning in it.
Yeah, for sure. So then I guess then the next question on that point is, what happened? We're getting close to the end of the season here. We can deconstruct it a little bit. What do you think happened to go from 19-13 heading into January to 2-12, 21-25 at the end of January, and completely out of the playoffs? But what was
you and I both noticed when it happened, though. We noticed when it happened. We noticed exactly when it happened and could tell what it was.
It happened in like December.
The accountability factor fell through the floor. Players weren't giving a crap anymore about one another or about their own play. And when you lose that accountability, the defense is going to go to crap, and it did. It went downhill fast.
You know, accountability's been an interesting word that's been thrown around all season. You know, I know Rob Hennigan's thrown it around. I think Magic CEO Alex Martins has thrown it around. Scott Skiles has certainly thrown it around. He wants to hold players accountable to a certain standard. To me, the issue isn't necessarily. I mean, I think accountability is certainly a part of it. But we were seeing even in late December some cracks in the defensive veneer. The team just didn't seem committed.
Like they thought they were going to succeed, but without having like really have built that reputation already amongst anybody, not even themselves, you know?
Yeah,
there's an expectation.
Kind of see that. Some of it was, I think to put it in kind of simplistic terms, they just kind of expected it to happen instead of necessarily doing the kind of gritty, dirty work that it actually took to build what they built in the first 2 months of the season.
Right.
I've had this conversation with a few people. I remember Skiles kind of hinting at this, and I think I pressed him a few times on it. But my impression was, you know, the Magic were playing really well, but they weren't always crisp and clean with their very simple defensive principles. And so Skiles couldn't add wrinkles. He couldn't make adjustments. He didn't, and this is another word that I've thrown around a lot when explaining rotation decisions and trying to find some reason for why things are happening the way they're happening on the floor. It didn't feel like Skiles trusted the players enough with the base defense, executing it properly, to make in-game adjustments. Like he said it a few times early in the season, we would tell the players to do something in a timeout, make an adjustment, and someone or the whole group just wouldn't do it. And you know, if you're messing up something that basic and you've got to work on something that basic, that becomes a problem.
He's not there to babysit them and teach them the fundamentals of basketball.
Yeah. I mean, he had to a little bit in training camp, but it seemed like once they left that training camp environment and kind of the newness wore off and teams figured out how to attack them, the Magic just didn't know how to react to it. And, you know, maybe I'm reading the situation wrong, and I very well could be, but that was my impression of things, is they just didn't know how to react to it. And then that's when perhaps 3 years of losing came in and bad habits started sinking in and guys started playing for themselves a little bit too much or trying to overdo things in some ways.
I think the parts are kind of weak in some places too, you know?
Oh yeah. There was definitely a roster issue too.
Yeah. I mean, like if you look at it like a snake, the head of the snake is Elfrid Payton, and his defense has been pretty poor on ball all season.
His pick and roll defense has been horrendous. Yeah.
And then the tail of the snake is Vucevic, and he's the slowest footed mover on the entire team, laterally and up and down the court. And he has to anchor the baseline. I mean, like, how much better is the defense when Dedmon is in there? But then Dedmon can't do anything offensively. It's just, I mean, the roster has got a lot of cracks in it, you know.
It does, and you know, I think, and honestly, more than the let's play meaningful games in March goal, I think the Magic knew they were not a complete team yet, and I think one of the big things they needed to learn this year was that exact point. Where are our cracks on the roster? Where do we need to improve? And which guys do we need to keep on our roster moving forward? How do we make this team better? And obviously, to make the team better, you've probably got to give up something valuable in return. And we've learned that with Tobias Harris, I think. But, you know, one of the I mean, that's one of the big questions we needed to find out is, you know, can this roster win in a coach expecting wins, pushing for wins, you know, telling guys you've got to do this way for us to win, you know, like with all that in play, how would this team respond? And at the beginning of the season, it looked great, and we saw the potential that this team has. And so you wonder, where's the consistency? What happens when the chips are on the table? And I think, you know, I mean, I'm not a big believer in clutch stats or how a team plays late in games. I think it's no different than the other games. But there is something to it that when games got tight, the Magic kind of went into a shell. And they got tight instead of playing loose or sticking to their offense or making the right plays. They've lost. I mean, I think after Sunday's game in Toronto, Evan Fournier said, you know, it feels, you don't want it to feel this way, but it feels like here we go again. And I think that's really kind of gotten into their psyche that they're not going to be able to pull out these close games. They're not going to be able to hold off charges late in games. And
that's been the case all season. You wrote weeks ago or months ago, I don't know when, that they've lost more close games than any other team in the NBA.
It was about a month ago before they played the Warriors that they'd played the most minutes within 10 points of any team in the NBA. And that, you know, to some extent, that is a sign of progress. Like, I'm not going to poo-poo that. They don't get blown out very often. You know, they're hanging around right there.
And there's a reason for that we've talked about, too. You know, that they play to the level of their competition.
And, I mean, like, essentially, this is a mediocre team. Mediocre teams play to the level of their competition. I mean, we saw that throughout the early 2000s with the McGrady years. Those McGrady teams, they could beat anybody. They could lose to anybody on any night. That's the definition of a 500 team.
And,
you know, the Magic aren't quite 500. They're probably on pace for about how many wins they should have anyway. But, you know, you talked about, like Fournier said Sunday, you know, if we can win half the close games that we've lost, I think they played 13 games that were decided by 5 points or less or something like that. You know, they've won maybe two or three of those or something like that. I mean, I'm not
really
sure.
Yeah, I had a record at one point that I calculated earlier in the season, if you remember.
Yeah.
About games decided by, what was it, seven or less, I had said?
Something like that, yeah.
And they had a horrible record in those games. It was like 3-11 or something, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you win half those games, you're looking at maybe three, four, maybe five more wins. Five more wins puts you in the conversation for the playoffs. So it's not like, I mean, there's a lot of frustration, as there should be, and there's some panic about this roster, but it's not like they're super far off. I do think they need to take a more tangible step forward. I think this year did show some holes on the roster that need to be filled, and did so because they were pushing to win and pushing in the way that they were pushing. And I think the frustration is perfectly legitimate. I don't mean to like poo-poo anyone who's disappointed with how this season went. I mean, I think that's healthy to be, not, you know, maybe frustrated is okay. I mean, I'm not saying don't be frustrated, but I'm not poo-pooing anyone who wants to call this season a failure. I mean, I think that's going a little too far, but it does say something that, you know, they're right there. They're not as far off as maybe we think they are. But they're still missing that extra piece because this keeps happening. It hasn't improved as the year's gone on. It's kind of stagnated, and the Magic have kind of stagnated in many ways too.
And there's no alpha dog, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, and that's a huge problem as well. When you look, I mean, we've talked a little bit about the holes on this roster, and it being clear holes. I mean, alpha dogs, I think, one. What other needs do the Magic need to go out and fill this summer to take that next step that people wanted to see this year that needs to happen next year? Because I do believe this. 2017 is a make or break year for Rob Hennigan. They've got to make the playoffs next year.
I think
that directive is very clear. especially if
I
go
think
spend
that,
money.
that some of those things could have already been addressed with the proper moves. You know, I am not saying Willie Cauley-Stein set the NBA on fire, but he would have helped a lot more than Mario Hezonja this year on a this year basis. I'm still on the fence about Hezonja. You know, but they need a defensive big. That's one of them. They need a defensive big that is not a complete offensive liability, you know? And, Willie Cauley-Stein might not be the player, but I'm just saying, for example, they need a defensive big and they could have had one already. They need more shooting, even than what they have on the roster, because when your starting shooting guard is Victor Oladipo, and he's a below average shooter, and that's a position that's supposed to shoot the basketball, that's going to cause problems.
He's certainly a below average 3-point shooter. I'm preparing to write an article on this pretty soon. I want to get a little bit more sourcing done on it. But Victor Oladipo is actually an above average mid range shooter. It's pretty interesting looking at his numbers. He's shooting like 45% on mid range jumpers.
He does seem to get it cooking from mid range. I didn't know the numbers on it. Anyway,
that's something for the future.
Yeah, and then you get down to that Fournier versus Oladipo question. We might tackle that later. At the point guard position, Elfrid Payton has played horrible defense all season. Point guards have eaten Orlando alive. We just saw it again last night with Isaiah Thomas.
Yep.
He just diced Orlando into pieces, and it was all Elfrid Payton lagging three steps behind every play, you know?
I mean, it was Jennings, too. It wasn't just
Jennings was just as bad.
I've ragged on Payton for his on-ball, for his screen defense, and I think you have, too. Some of that goes on the centers as well. It goes on, you know, Nikola Vucevic maybe not calling the right coverage, or Vucevic just doesn't hedge. I mean, I think putting Payton with a center who can actually defend the pick and roll would also help him a lot. Jason Smith sometimes doesn't call coverage as well. There's a general lack of communication on defense, and it starts with that pick and roll, and that's where the defense starts.
Look at it this way: how bad is Vucevic when we start thinking Jason Smith is a really good defender?
Yeah,
yeah, because I mean, that's what we're thinking. And he's not. He's not. He's just playing pretty good defense, and Vucevic is that bad that we're actually thinking Jason Smith is all NBA. You know?
Yeah, and my first thought when Ilyasova came was, it's nice to have a big that can hedge. Because Ilyasova does hedge pretty well. I mean,
he defends the pick and roll well. I mean, he does a few things pretty well. I'm just saying he's
replaceable
talent. That's all.
Oh yeah, no. I was watching some tape for the article I did on Mario Hezonja, and I was watching some tape on the article I wrote about Mario Hezonja this afternoon, and I was ready to blame Hezonja for dribbling into a trap, and I was watching the tape again, and I was just like, Ersan didn't even bother to set the screen. He tried a slip pop, like he faked the screen and popped to the wing, and part of it's on Hezonja for not doing the over the head throw to the guy rolling, but I mean, he just left Hezonja there hanging, and it was just like, either it's a miscommunication on what he was supposed to do, or Hezonja doesn't know how to read the play, or you know, XYZ, whatever it is, but just like,
I mean, a lot of bigs do that, though. You know, they set a pick, and then they'll pivot before the player even runs into them. And
but,
it's just like,
I mean, like,
it's completely ineffective.
Yeah,
but,
and I mean, I'm not going to say completely blame Ilyasova, but, like,
yeah,
I mean,
the
Magic screens have not been strong. And I know Zach Palmer has been big on that for all year, too. The Magic are not a great screening team. They don't free up their guys on the pick and roll. And, you know, again, we're talking about very basic, simple things that a coach can tell a player to do, and to teach them how to do, but they don't necessarily do for whatever reason.
Well, you know, we were talking about losing close games.
There's a lot
of
problems.
There's a lot. There's a whole lot. We're talking about losing close games, and, like, the Magic's best play in a close game is the Oladipo-Vucevic pick and roll. Do you think opposing teams are really, like, dreading that?
they could. You know, more than you'd think. Like, there's actually, you know, this is another thing that's coming down the pike. I know there was a paper written at Sloan, at the Sloan Analytics Conference that was held a couple weeks ago, talking about pick and roll combos, and they did single out the Oladipo Vucevic combo as a good one.
That's a good one. Awesome. I mean, at his best,
that I'd have to look. I don't know if I have. I don't know if we have public access to those numbers.
It can work really well when it works. But I mean, I say that about a lot of stuff, and it's general vague statement. But when Oladipo's aggressive and getting to the basket, and Vucevic is rolling really hard to the basket instead of just popping every time, I mean, then it's really effective.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I mean that's part of Vucevic's problem too. Is he falls in love with his jumper sometimes too much.
Way too much.
But like when you have an Oladipo or Peyton that just wants to get downhill and drive the lane, but also has the smarts to pass back out, then it works. It can work offensively.
Yeah, I mean, to say it's bad is wrong, but like I'd rather have a great isolation score, and I guess that's where some people are like, well, why'd you trade Tobias Harris then? You know, so.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know where to cut this one anymore. It's a mess.
Yeah. But I mean, again, like this is these are the questions that the Magic needed to be asking and needed to get some answers on, in my opinion. So, what do the Magic have in Victor Oladipo? Essentially, like, and the reason I want to single out maybe Victor a little bit, he was the number two pick in his draft. He's you know, kind of the face of the franchise in a lot of ways. He's had this strange season. Like, he's starting to come back around and play at maybe the level we expected him to play at all year.
I mean, at this point, the best thing Victor Oladipo could do for the Orlando Magic is to go to that Team USA camp and recruit.
There's not going to be a Team USA camp this summer.
Well, whenever it happens. I mean, he is the closest thing Orlando has to a player that opposing teams look at as something like a star.
Yes, yes. And he started
so
playing.
If somebody's
going to
reel in another talent, it's him.
And I think he's going to be him and Aaron Gordon are the big selling points in this group, on this team. You know, I wrote about this a little bit yesterday coming out of off his game against the Celtics. What do you make of Victor Oladipo in the last 10-12 games? I mean, like, it feels very much like the end of last season when we started believing a lot in him. What does he have left to prove this year?
He has to carry it into next year. I mean, like last year, you had assigned the piece Victor Oladipo's star turn. I'm like, sure, I'm all over that, you know. And I wrote it, and we thought it happened, but it didn't. And so it needs to carry through the rest of the year and into next year and just keep going. I mean, like it needs to not end. That's what needs to happen.
So with that baggage and that history, because I mean we're seeing Oladipo play at a really high level again, and it feels just too late. It's just like, where was this earlier? Should we believe this then? Because essentially,
it's like the guy that goes back with his girlfriend after two or three times of being cheated.
This is year three of Victor Oladipo.
He's
eligible for an extension this summer. The Magic, in my mind, and this may not be completely true. I could see them both coming back. But essentially, the Magic have to make a decision between re-signing Evan Fournier or trying to move Victor Oladipo. Because I don't think if the team is very serious about winning, you can keep the two together. Because Evan's not a three, in my opinion.
No, he's not. Definitely not. I was thinking about that this morning, too, when I was brainstorming the whole Oladipo and Fournier baseball, whatever you want to call it. It's intertwined careers is what it is right now.
Yeah. And so, essentially, this summer, the Magic have to make that decision. Because, I mean, they can lowball Oladipo on an extension and let him play restricted free agency, but they've got to make that decision either this summer or by next year's trade deadline. And I think it'll be better to make it this summer than to wait to the trade deadline, especially if they're trying to win so they can get something of value. So
the next thing we were thinking about was what is Oladipo's trade value then?
I mean, you just said it. Oladipo is the guy people think is the star of this team.
I think his trade value is variant, very fluctuating.
Oh yeah, I think
from
it is
GM
too.
To GM, yeah. Because he brings so many intangibles. He plays such good defense, and then his flaws are just as accentuated. So I think you have one GM maybe that would pay very nicely for Oladipo, and another that would what you would consider lowballing you.
And certainly the Magic will expect a big haul in return. I mean, I think a deal centered around Oladipo, their draft pick, and maybe Ersan Ilyasova, they'll feel like they can get something of value. Because, I think what, again, to me, the biggest problem with losing teams, essentially, is they have players playing the wrong roles. Oladipo has been kind of put into this role of being the primary scorer or primary creator, and that may not be his optimal role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, is he a number one option? I don't think any of us necessarily think that's the case. I don't know what you really could expect to get back for Oladipo. Like, it's obviously kind of silly to just throw names around, but I don't know like what level of player you're necessarily expecting to get back for.
I think the Magic will be patient because of that. But and we're having this discussion and it's hypothetical discussion because the Magic may really like Oladipo. They may believe and know Oladipo's our guy. We think he can still be an all-star and he'll be the guy that attracts us a free agent more than Evan Fournier would. While Evan's a very good player, has some good skills, we can find those skills elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, certainly there's another side to that debate, and I think we'll be having that debate throughout the early parts of the offseason and trying to figure out which direction the Magic will go, or I'm sure there will be different people saying different things. I know I've had people on my mentions saying, you know, Fournier isn't a consistent enough shooter, although I think he's been the most consistent player on the team this year, which is saying something on a team of so many inconsistent guys. But but Oladipo certainly has a higher ceiling, and I don't think you just let Oladipo go for nothing.
Well, no, you know, the thing you just said there about basically being a replaceable part is why Tobias Harris could be traded. Because
yes.
So what? The Magic strike out on all the best free agents and they bring in Chandler Parsons. That's about Tobias Harris. So what was lost then? Nothing. That's why I said it was necessary.
They didn't really lose anything.
No, I mean, replaceable parts is a big factor. And Oladipo is a less replaceable part. He's kind of a unique talent, you know? And Fournier is a good player, but like you say, he's like a very role player, supporting cast type guy. And Oladipo's ceiling at this point is much higher because, I mean, Fournier, I think we would agree, is either peaked or very close to peaked. Whereas Oladipo, we see flashes that suggest he could have a much higher ceiling, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and it's not to say Fournier's peaked, but yeah, I think this is about what Fournier is going to be. And if he can be this for the next 6-7 years, that's a hell of a career. Yeah. I mean, that's really good. I mean, he's been really, really good this year. There's some breaking news coming across the wire for Orlando Sports if anyone's interested. So I apologize if I'm a little distracted here. Nothing too surprising. Johnny Dawkins is going to be the new head coach at UCF, it looks like. So charge on there, I guess.
I was always a fan of Dawkins and Hawkins backcourt in Philadelphia.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good old Hersey Hawkins, man. Oladipo, I think, has the higher ceiling, and Fournier does some things very well that the team needs, no doubt about it. But you know, it's a tough decision. It's not an easy decision, and it's probably going to be one of the big decisions that defines Hennigan's career, because essentially, I mean. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. this summer is the summer Hennigan needs to do something. Like, this is where he proves his worth to the team.
It's the summer of Rob.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a little bit about some off-season stuff, where the team's been, what kind of the questions that are being raised. You know, I wrote a little thing for Orlando Sports Daily. I'm sure we'll reset it a little bit on Orlando Magic Daily very, very soon, about what's left to learn this season. We've got 12 games to go, and it still feels like there's still some things we need to resolve. And one of those, I think, is the Oladipo-Fournier question that needs to continue to develop. But to you, looking at these final 12 games, what's the biggest thing the Magic need to accomplish in the last 12 games? And I'll take this one out, because I think this should go without saying, and we'll maybe talk about it and when we get to the end. Aside from winning basketball games, what's the biggest thing you want to see in the final 12 games of the season?
You know, I think that when you look at this roster, it has a lot of known commodities. We know what some of these guys are as NBA players, but there's other guys we don't know. And Hisonya and Aaron Gordon are the two biggest ones, the ones people want to see on the court the most. And so I think, yeah, if you want to say the rest of the season is best served towards prospect development, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the biggest thing. One of the bigger things the Magic need to learn is how much has Mario Hisonya learned. When he got starting minutes, he looked pretty good, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Coming off the bench, they tightened the leash a little bit, and he made some mistakes. He's been making some rookie mistakes, and they've kept him pretty tight, and they've not let him kind of make some of the repeated mistakes maybe. But even in the quest to get wins, I do think it is time to let Mario off the leash a little bit and let him play a lot more. Maybe not a lot more, but certainly play more. It just feels like it's time. You know, you don't have as much to play for. You got to see what he can give you. You got to let him kind of put everything together. I'm curious to see what he does with more meaningful playing time and even maybe some late game playing time. Of course, the issue is, who do you take out for him? There isn't a clear answer to that either. But it's time to let Hisonya play through mistakes a little bit more and get himself comfortable, more comfortable than he already is, but get himself into a, we're trusting you, we believe in you, we have confidence that you will do this, or you will be this player. Go show us. And if you make a mistake, that's okay. Just make a better play the next time. And maybe they've treated him like that, and he just hasn't clicked for him. But I do think they need to play Hisonya more, and even play Gordon a little bit more.
The time for
them to not play.
The time for really reactionary coaching from Skiles is over now. You know, the kind of stuff. By that I mean the kind of stuff. Player X turned it over 2 out of 3 possessions. They're out of the game.
For certain players, the time for that is past.
For Hisonya, for Aaron Gordon,
that's done.
For Oladipo, all the young guys that are trying to flourish right now, they need to be given the leash to do so. You know, let off the chain, like you're saying, and you can't learn when you're getting pulled and not getting consistent minutes. You know, like the 2 minute stints and then you're back for 4 minutes later. You know, that's not quality playing time.
No, they definitely need the time to get into a rhythm. And Gordon struggled with foul trouble of late, and that's why his minutes have come down a little bit. He's kind of slipped a little bit defensively. Hisonya's had some issues with turnovers lately, and I get from a winning perspective why that they have the quick leash, but you know, I'm someone that believes the team should still be trying to win. I think that's a valuable goal in and of itself. They don't want to create bad habits, but at the same time, it does feel like, I agree, it's time to let them play through mistakes, let them be the focus, you know, not verbally guarantee them 20 minutes, but give them 20 minutes, 25 minutes a game to at least for Hisonya to play that much and just go play, frankly. I think that's been the biggest thing with Hisonya, is he's been looking over his shoulder a lot this season and hasn't been able to just play. How do you look at Hezonja this season?
We didn't get to see enough of him. That's my biggest conclusion. He has a lot of real good skills as a player that are valuable, you know, in terms of like his ability to get his shot off with no space at all, to bail out possessions and get long threes often that go in.
His passing ability is incredible. Like one thing I didn't expect is his passing ability.
I noticed that right away in summer league, and he's really quick about making the right moves too. So, like, yeah, the tools are there for him to be a very good player. How good? None of us have any idea, you know?
And like, I looked at this season for Hezonja and knew, like, the people who expected him to come in and be a superstar, I think, were overhyping him a little bit. This was always the kind of season he was going to have. He was going to have to earn his way off the bench because there were guys in front of him who needed minutes, too. And he was always going to have these ups and downs and struggle a little bit. That's just kind of where he was at. And the unfortunate thing is there have been times when he has not looked ready for the NBA, which is okay. He's 18, 19 years old. Like he didn't need to come in a finished product at all.
He's 20, isn't he?
He's 20. Yeah, I think he's 20. You're right. Yeah. He didn't need to come into the NBA a finished product. The one thing that I'm a little hesitant about is it does look like he's lost some confidence. You know, he's a confident guy. He'll tell you he needs to improve on everything. Like, he knew how big of a task was ahead of him, and he
talking plenty of smack last night against the Celtics, Phil.
He was?
He was talking a lot of smack, yeah. He really started drawing.
He was cursing at himself.
He started getting in the face of who was it? The Celtics broadcasters were remarking on it. So I mean, I watched a different broadcast than you that showed it. Yeah. Yeah. So he still has some confidence, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, I think the confidence is still there. It's not overconfidence like maybe was advertised. I think he'll be fine. I mean, I've seen enough this year where I think he'll be fine. I think he'll find his way, and once a role is more better defined for him and he's more comfortable in the NBA game.
I don't have a good enough read on him. I mean, I'm being honest. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. I think. We'll see a very different Mario Hezonja come summer league. I really do. It feels like we've said this every year that one of the Magic guys is going to come and dominate summer league. Mario Hezonja is going to dominate summer league. I think he'll make that big of a step from the end of April to July.
And he'll come out like Aaron Gordon, thinking he's the best guy in the whole league, and play like it too.
And he should. Unless Ben Simmons happens to be there, or Brandon Ingram, but that's another debate as well. But I think for the last 12 games, what I want to see is a concerted focus to build confidence in, Mario Hezonja. They need to get him more confident.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I think Skiles' coaching has been necessarily bad. It's not any of that, but I do think, you know, they need to put him in situations where he will succeed, and that's kind of what they've tried to do in some ways throughout the season. But they need to challenge him, but also help him succeed a little bit more in these final 12 games, and give him the opportunity to do so. Even if he makes mistakes, go back to him and say, "We believe in you that you can get this. You're our horse the rest of the game. You're our horse for this time period." And just let him see what he can do. Because, I mean, I think we've seen this year that when he gets it going, he's a very effective player.
You know, roster-wise, a lot of people before the season would have said, "Well, I got Fournier. I'm sorry, we got Hezonja. We won't need Fournier anymore." I mean, we don't know that yet. We don't know that he's going to ever play to that level.
Yeah. We'll see. And I think that's the biggest frustration from this entire season in many ways is we don't know. We still don't have clear answers about most of this roster. And that's something they have to continue to answer, to be frank. They have to continue to find those answers and answer those questions as best they can. And so that's maybe what the final 12 games give the most information about, really. So it's definitely tricky. So that gets us maybe to our final point of the evening. In sure. These final 12 games, what is the main goal? Because, I mean, there's a debate among Magic fans. I know where I stand on this debate. I mean, I've said it here. I think the Magic need to continue to push for wins. I don't think there's much use in tanking at this late stage of the season. I think it sets the wrong tone for the players on the roster and the culture of accountability that they're trying to build to purposefully lose games. Certainly, playing your young guys more maybe means you lose a little bit more, but again, everyone on this team is young. When we're saying play your young guys more, we're saying play Elfrid Payton more than Brandon Jennings, or play Aaron Gordon over Ersan Ilyasova. I mean, we're not talking anything super crazy here. As far as playing your young guys, the young guys are the guys that should help you try to win. And so you've got to let those guys try and win, I think. But, you know, there is something to say, you know, let's get as many ping pong balls as we can and let's, you know, see if things bounce our way this time in the lottery, or get ourselves in position to maybe draft Buddy Hield. I mean, a guy that I think could help the Magic immediately, helps clarify that question about Evan Fournier, because I think he can't play the three, but he does a lot of the same shooting things that Evan Fournier does, and you can bring him off the bench, and I think he'll be effective at the moment he steps on an NBA floor. You know, what do you do with these final 12 games in that sense, or does it all kind of take care of itself with, you know, trying to get Hezonja a few more minutes, or what do you fall on that debate? What should the team be doing?
I mean, no team steps out on the game to lose out on the court to lose the game, you know.
Sure.
So I think the point still remains to get as many wins as possible. Yeah, you go out and try to win every night, and you try to play as a team, you know, not be playing for stats or contracts, but play like a basketball team. If you play like a basketball team and win as many games as possible, I'm pleased with the outcome that they're out there competing. You know, I guess that's it. Compete, really, compete.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I guess the more subtle question, or the more complex question, do you play like a CJ Watson late in the game over Elfrid Payton, or Brandon Jennings over Elfrid Payton late in the game, assuming Payton's healthy, of course. Do you play Jennings over Payton late in the game to get a win, or do you want to make sure a young guy, and maybe Payton's the wrong example because he's got plenty of experience here, but or do you make sure the young guys get the chance to finish the game and get that experience?
Yeah, I don't. I'd even go to say as far as that one is a little situational, you know.
Okay.
In terms of who's playing best that night, because we've already seen Skiles coaches like that, and a lot of coaches do. You know, if Jennings was really having a great night, then he would play before Payton at the end of the game. If it was close, then you play Payton. Something along those lines, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's. I mean, yeah, and I think Skiles has shown a penchant, for one reason or another, to try and stick with the hot hand late in games. We saw Nicholson finish Sunday's game against Toronto. That was somewhat controversial that he did. He stuck with Ilyasova. That was controversial that he did. You know, it's been a very strange season. That's both in a good way and a bad way. Like, I think it's strange but strange in that, you know, we've gotten some questions answered, or we've asked some serious questions that need to be asked. But strange in that this team could be so much better than they are, and they just didn't get over that hump that was right there in front of them. They got a little bit further up the hill, but they didn't crest the peak.
If that
analogy makes sense.
It leaves us with the summer of Rob.
Yeah.
Yep.
It certainly does. But we got 12 more games to go before we get there. We've gone for almost an hour now, Brett. I think we've about covered everything we need to cover in these final to prep everyone for the final 3-4 weeks of the season here. It's been an interesting ride for sure, and I do think the Magic accomplished a little bit of what they wanted to accomplish, if not certainly not all, but a little bit. And I think when you look back at the season, it's going to be a transition year. It's going to be a year that you either look back and say, this year taught us a lot and made us the team that we are in 2018, or you're going to look back and say, these last 4 years were completely lost. We just didn't know which direction we were going in 2016.
It taught me a little more as a basketball watcher, you know, this season really did. Taught me a little more as a student of basketball that some of the things that can most go wrong in a team are some of the things that are hardest to put your finger on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes teams just don't work, and
right.
we'll find out exactly where the Magic are headed in the coming months, but let's get through the final 12 games and see what we can get out of it. There's still opportunities, and I know people hate me saying this, but the playoffs aren't completely gone yet, guys. You're not out until they tell you you're out.
I thought you were going to say something about Orlando City, so I don't know why.
Orlando City hasn't lost a game yet, so
okay.
I've only played three. And I will continue to note, Northwestern is still undefeated in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah.
You can't lose if you don't play. Remember that, everybody.
Did they take an NIT invite this year even?
No, we didn't get invited to the NIT.
It just keeps rolling on the good times, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I said, UCF appears to have hired Johnny Dawkins. I'm just coming back from a UCF softball game. Good times out there at the UCF softball complex. Go check them out. Probably the best team on campus if you're a UCF Knights fan. They're great group as well. Great group of girls. They're all fantastic. As most softball teams are. I love softball.
But, you know, Johnny Dawkins is kind of like a much more successful Brandon Jennings.
I don't know about that. I don't remember watching Johnny Dawkins. I didn't actually watch
him. He was the lefty, and he had a real quick shot like that, but he was good. He was really, really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see how he is as a coach. He was okay at Stanford. We might get some low. I mean, if anything, Johnny Dawkins being the head coach of Stanford will give the Lopez twins an excuse to visit Orlando more often. And we know that they love Orlando because that's where Disney is.
Yeah.
But yeah, now we've completely sidetracked. Brett, any other words of wisdom before we sign off here?
I mean, I guess my last thing is something I feel like I've had to say for years now is that this has been four losing seasons now. But the Magic have been a great organization and have had their ups and downs, and like things are going to get better again. It's just it might not happen as quick as we had hoped or expected it, especially after a 19-13 start. But there's been enough positive signs, and having the cap room, and just, you know, this next season is make or break for Rob Hennigan, but it's not for the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting you bring that up. If the Magic missing the playoffs this year will tie the longest streak of the Magic missing the playoffs in franchise history. Mm-hmm. They missed the playoffs the first 4 years of their existence, and so this will tie that mark. And so this is you're right. This is a franchise that doesn't stay down very long. This is actually the longest they've been without an all-star now, 4 years. So yeah, they find a way to at least be in the conversation, and what they've tried to do the last 5 years, they've never tried to do in franchise history. So I do applaud them for trying to take a long-term view and not taking the easy way out and getting to the playoffs immediately after the Dwight Howard trade. And whether you want to call the rebuild a success or not, you know, they certainly played for lottery ball, ping pong balls a lot, and didn't strike it rich in the lottery on three occasions. And that certainly hurt how they wanted to build. But, you know, I at least applaud them for the intention, if not the execution. You know, I think they really did want to build a championship team and felt this was the best way to do it, and it just didn't work out that way. And so now they're trying to pivot and move forward, and they've kept some flexibility. And I think the most important thing to remember entering this offseason is they can do a lot. They may not just sign – they may not sign a max guy. They may trade for him. They may – they've got the cap room to absorb a big salary if they can find someone to take it or find someone to give it to them. And so, you know, they've got a lot of potential moves they can make. They don't have to, you know, go conventional routes, and they don't even have to use the money they've got. They can keep it in their back pocket and use it another time. You know, I think it's important that they don't come back with the same roster again like they did this summer, essentially. And I think it's important that they take a step forward and make the playoffs next year. But they're not a team that stands pat when they miss the playoffs like this. They believe they had a playoff team. They felt they were ready, and they didn't hit that goal. And so now they're going to ask themselves some hard questions and try to accomplish that goal that they couldn't get this year. And I think that they'll take real steps to do it. And so, regardless of what you think of Hennigan, regardless of what you think of ownership right now, you know, I do think everyone in that organization is committed to trying to field a winner, and they're gonna do all that they can this summer to do that. Whether they're successful in it is another question entirely. But again, the intention is there. Now they've just got to execute.
Yeah.
So
pretty much.
That's a good place to leave us off, Brett. Thank you for joining us again here on the Orlando Magic Daily Podcast. You can follow Brett on Twitter at 33Trigger. That's 33Trigger, as in what Larry Bird did before he shot the basketball. you can follow me on Twitter at OMagicDaily. You can always follow us there. Visit us at OrlandoMagicDaily.com as well. We've got a lot of great content. I previewed some of the things that I'm working on. We've got a lot of other things working on, I think. One of our writers is actually writing about the Magic's franchise history and some of the successes they've had, just to put this stretch in perspective as well. And we've got a lot of other great stuff coming. I'm sorry?
Is that Joe Buckley on that one?
Yeah, I think Joe's gonna be writing that up in the very near future. Yeah. You know, we'll have a lot of other great content coming up. Soon as well. We're not taking these final 12 games off. We're not going to tank. We're gonna try and run through the tape here and finish the season strong. So I've got to get to work on some things, because I've got a post I got to get done. I got to get this posted. So Brett, thanks once again.
It was fun. I have some ideas now. So I mean, we know what we're going to look at for these last 12 games.
Absolutely, and that's. There's, I mean, like I said, I think there's still a lot to accomplish and still a lot to learn in these final games. So, for Brett, this has been Philip. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Orlando Magic Daily Podcast. One day I'll figure out how to do a good outro. We'll see you next time.
Adios.